market rate, £3,000 a day. Were you signing Lionel Messi?
This is First Minister's Questions. Just once, it would be nice to get a First Minister's answer.
For Douglas Ross to stand there and talk about losing grip of a party when he has been leader, the Conservatives have had the longest attempted coup in Scottish political history.
The Steenie, a politics podcast from The Scotsman. Hello and welcome to The Steamie, The Scotsman's politics podcast. I'm Alistair Grant, the political editor of The Scotsman, and I'm joined today, as always, by Rachel Amery, The Scotsman's political correspondent, David Ball, The Scotsman's deputy political editor, and from Westminster, or from London actually, probably more accurately, Alexander Brown, The Scotsman's Westminster correspondent, to talk about another week of politics north and south of the border. Later on, we'll hear from the SNP MSP Ruth Maguire, who Rachel interviewed as part of a series of articles examining calls to reform prostitution laws in Scotland, which you can read in full in the Scotsman's website. We'll also hear from Alex about the latest drama in Westminster, where Prime Minister Rishi Sunak has been desperately seeking to unify a party, increasingly worried about the electoral trouncing that might await it in the months ahead. But first, we're recording this in the Scotsman's tiny cupboard-like office in Holyrood, after First Minister's Questions on Thursday, and most of the attention here in Holyrood has been focused on new hate crime legislation that's coming into force on April 1st. The Hate Crime Act, which was passed by MSPs 3 years ago, back in 2021, makes it an offence to stir up hatred against protected characteristics, including age, disability, religion, sexual orientation, and transgender identity. Stirring up racial hatred was already illegal. It has been for decades, but this new legislation expands that concept to cover those other characteristics, and it's safe to say that it's proved hugely controversial ever since it was first debated in Holyrood. There are concerns about freedom of expression, concerns about how the police will handle this, how the law will be implemented in practice. Rachel, this was brought up in First Minister's Questions today by Scottish Conservative leader Douglas Ross. What did he say about it?
Yes, we were expecting it to come up today because, as you said, it's getting ever closer to the date when this comes into force here. And there have been a lot of concerns, primarily raised by the Conservatives here, that the law is just going to be very unworkable. I think one of the main issues at the moment is that police staff have been given, I think it's a 2-hour training video online, and that's kind of the only sort of training they're getting at the moment for this legislation. So that's one of the problems that Douglas Ross was bringing up today. But basically he would say that he's worried that it's going to infringe on freedom of speech. It's going to criminalise innocent people when police are already very, very stretched as well. But as Hamza Yousaf responded, we've already got this legislation in place for racial hatred. That's been since the 80s, I think.
Yeah.
So a long time that's been in place for racial hatred. And Hamza Yousaf was saying that he's been protected by that for almost all his life. And it's not caused any of these issues that are being brought up now. So he's saying it worked for that law. So why can't it work for this law as well, which is more focused on age, religion, sexual orientation, things like that.
And David, one of the things that Rachel mentioned there and Douglas Ross brought up in the chamber is the concerns that have been raised by the Scottish Police Federation, which obviously represents rank and file police officers. You spoke to them for a piece in The Scotsman a couple of days ago. What are their concerns?
Yeah, so they're concerned about how the police are being prepared to implement this new law, basically. Rachel mentioned the training concerns. That's something the Police Federation have been raising for some time, and they're putting it down to police cutbacks from the Scottish Government, that training isn't done as thoroughly as it maybe once was. And for this in particular, the 2-hour training session, they're worried that isn't equipping officers adequately to be able to enforce this. A lot of it's going to be down to sort of police interpretation. And they have raised concerns that if the police aren't 100% sure what the law entails or how to sort of regulate that mistakes will be made and people could be charged or at least investigated, maybe when they don't need to, which is what Douglas Ross was trying to sort of hint at today.
And obviously those concerns about how the police will, actually implement this in terms of how they'll investigate it, whether their involvement in and of itself will have a chilling effect. Do you think that's something that the police themselves are worried about? Do you think that's a legitimate concern?
Yeah, I mean, if you take the police federation's concerns, who are sort of representing those sort of rank and file officers, that they probably are a bit concerned that they're not going to know where the criminal bar sort of hangs. It's not very black and white, which obviously in law is a bit unusual. It's not sort of as strict as you've done an offence. It's all down to their interpretation of the law, and it's a brand new law. And also they've got this thing where they're going to investigate sort of every little sort of detail, every complaint that is brought to them. So it does pose questions for the police as to where the criminal bar lies when they're looking at all these complaints.
And Rachel, how effective do you think this attack was by Douglas Ross? Do you think Hamza Yousaf managed to defend the legislation in the chamber? How convinced were you by what he said?
So Douglas Ross was bringing up quite a few of the arguments and worries that people have been voicing over the last few weeks, voicing concerns in newspapers as well, for example. I think Hamza Yousaf's response saying, you know, this is the same law that's been protecting me on the basis that he was a man of colour, I think it's a good argument. He was very sort of calm as well when he was explaining it. So hopefully that sort of calmness and the way he just sort of went through it quite thoroughly will sort of help people understand this law a bit more. But I think there's a lot of people who are against this bill or against this act coming through who are very loud at the moment, very vocal, and perhaps the government needs to be just as loud and vocal when it comes to sort of setting out what this act actually means.
Yeah, I think a lot of the communication from the police and from the government, certainly over the last few weeks when this has been hitting the headlines again, maybe hasn't been as good as it could have been. But David, this is obviously an issue that's been hitting the headlines in recent days. No indication that that's going to change before this April 1st deadline, I guess, before it comes into force. Where does this go next? Is it just a case of waiting and seeing how this law is actually implemented in practice?
Yeah, I think so. I mean, that's pretty much Labour's position on this. They've raised some concerns about the implementation, but they're kind of sitting back and just waiting to see what happens and see if there's any data that would show that there are issues that will need to be ironed out. But we won't know that until we see the law being implemented and whether there are any concerns. Rachel was right. Hamza Yousaf's kind of stuck to his guns and was very calm about it. He's very confident in this legislation coming through. He was the minister in charge of it when it went through Holyrood, so he's very confident and basically giving the police a lot of confidence to implement it as a question for them rather than ministers. And it is just a case of waiting and seeing whether there are any issues.
Well, I'm sure this issue isn't going anywhere and we'll probably return to it in a future episode of The Steamy. But from Holyrood to London, Alex, Rishi Sunak held a meeting with the backbench 1922 committee on Wednesday evening. You were there, hanging about outside the room, I'm assuming, soaking up the gossip. What was the purpose of it? And what is the mood among Tory MPs?
So the purpose of the 922 committee is the backbench group of MPs. And despite much excitement among, I would say, people on Twitter and newspaper editors, it was just a scheduled meeting. The Prime Minister was just meeting with his MPs, as he does. And he arrived to loud banging and sitting outside with all of the journalists. There was constant thumping on the tables. It's what they do when they hear something they approve of. They bang on the tables. A lot like in the Commons, you'll hear them say more, but in a funny, slightly even posher than me voice. It was a call to arms. He was saying, "Oh, you've seen what they've done in Birmingham Council. We can't let them do that to Britain. We've got to go and win the local elections and be a united party and stop Keir Starmer," which, you know, I would say you probably need more than Birmingham as a reference point. It's a remarkable thing because when MPs come out, we all swarm towards them and ask them what they think. And remarkably, most MPs who came out said, "Oh, you know, the atmosphere was great." One former minister who I know categorically despises Rishi Sunak said, "Oh, he's resplendent. You know, it was like watching a fine test match in cricket. I fully support them." And I mean, our listeners may be able to work out which former minister loves to talk about cricket and is very posh. I mean, I'll leave that entirely for them. Others were just like, "Oh, you know, he's..." One said it wouldn't say anything nice about him, but they said, "Oh, other people are saying it's the best they've ever seen them." So they wouldn't say it was the best they'd seen. But, you know, it's this weird farce of everyone pretending everything's okay. And the meeting is to placate them, but it hasn't really. Another former minister said to me, you know, it was completely flat. but it was fine. It'll get in past May and then we'll all have a panic and see what to do then. Another said the atmosphere was brilliant, but only because they weren't there and so they didn't have to be part of it. So the only people who were really positive were those who had managed to get out of it. But I think what was more interesting, before that, Rishi Sunak had basically said to MPs, you can go home early. He told them there'd be a one-line whip for next week. So instead of, you know, them going in a bad mood, he was like, you know what, I know you guys are unhappy about me, but, you know, clock off early. You know, I'm the boss. I'm a chill casual boss. I'll never work with someone like me again. It was, yeah, the mood is very, very bad among Tory party and they're all kind of pretending it's better than it is.
Is there anything they can do? I mean, there's all sorts of whispers that I see reported on Twitter, and I'm assuming they're flowing around the corridors of Westminster about potentially replacing Rishi Sunak, which seems, you know, from an outsider's perspective, a mad thing to do this close to an election, or a mad thing to even start talking about this close to an election. But is there any prospect of that? Is there anything Tory MPs can do, or do they just have to accept the approaching doom?
It's definitely something that MPs are thinking about, but I don't think there's any real expectation it can happen. And I think it's notable that only two MPs have gone on the record saying we need a change of leader. And what was most striking being on the corridor is Jonathan Gullis, a Redwall right-wing MP who has been no fan of the Prime Minister. He was one of the first out of the meeting and then did, I think I recorded it, 15 minutes outside the corridor so all the other MPs could go past, saying what a fantastic job Rishi Sunak was doing and how he couldn't wait to take on, and I quote, that woke wobbly lot over there. You know, he was someone who argued on Rwanda, but he said, which I think was, you know, quite interesting, you know, you can look back at what I've said before, I've never said anything about the Prime Minister on the record that criticises him. Which I mean, the on the record thing is carrying a lot of weight. But he's on the right of the party. They're all coming out to support him now because there isn't really another option. I mean, I think he framed it around this idea that at the moment, the polls show they would, you know, I think he gave a football analogy, they'll get relegated from the Premiership to the Championship. The change now would be such Tory psychodrama, they drop down to League Two. I mean, there's very little to be done. I think internal polling shows that Penny Mordaunt would do better. But it's interesting, all the rumours about Penny Mordaunt, about Tom Tugendhat, there's now accusations they aren't the ones briefing it. It's coming from Kemi Badenoch's camp. It's coming from Suella Braverman's camp. So all these briefings about leaders are coming from other people to make it seem like they're the disloyal one, when actually they're the ones who've been working on campaigns for quite some time. So there's nothing that can be done. And if there was, no one's doing it.
And I wanted to ask you as well, the row about the Rwanda bill is still ongoing in Westminster. That legislation has been bounced back from the Lords, but won't be back in the Commons till after recess now. What can we take from that?
Well, I think that's really interesting because once the Rwanda bill emergency legislation was, you know, announced, it was supposed to be emergency legislation. It was this really important thing the government had to get through as quickly as possible because at that time, I mean, threats from the Tory right, the Rwanda bill was the most important thing. Now it's been delayed. It's not going to happen until after recess. It's not being brought. And MPs are sent home on a one-line whip. So there is an argument from some MPs and from some government people I've spoken today. You know, the idea is that's important, but for party unity and to keep people on side, send people home. We'll deal with it after. It's not that it's not important, but right now it's better not to have people in Westminster gossiping. If you're not seeing someone in the tea room, you're unlikely to do a coup if you're somewhere with bad internet, which most constituencies are. It's a tactical thing about party management, is the impression that I've been given by MPs and figures in government.
Well, thank you very much, Alex. And for all the latest from Westminster and Holyrood, please check out the Scotsman's website and even consider subscribing if you don't already. It will be probably the best financial decision you could ever make. But Rachel, you've been working on a series of articles looking at the current prostitution laws in Scotland and calls to change the law to improve the safety of women.
Yeah, so listeners can go onto the Scotsman's website to see all the articles there that have been done in the past week. It's been really interesting, actually. So I was speaking to Ruth Maguire, who we'll hear from in a few seconds. She's been trying to campaign for the law to be changed. So at the moment, it is illegal to solicit in public, curb crawling, brothel keeping, and to run a pimping website. They are all illegal in Scotland just now. However, men, it tends to be men who are buying sex, that is not illegal, and they want to see that shifted and that changed so that it is illegal to buy sex as opposed to selling sex. So I've been talking to her about what she wants to see changed, the campaign that she's part of as well. And if you go onto the website, you'll see some interviews with some survivors of prostitution as well about their experiences. But let's hear from Ruth McGuire. So Ruth McGuire, MSP, thank you very much for joining us on The Steamy this morning. How are you doing?
I'm doing really well. Thank you for having me.
Now, we've had a series of stories on prostitution legislation in Scotland over the past week in The Scotsman, and you've been at the forefront of the campaign to change the law here. Do you want to start off by explaining what exactly the law is just now in Scotland?
Absolutely. So at the moment in Scotland, prostitution itself, so the exchange of sexual services for money, is legal. The associated activities, so public solicitation, operating a brothel and pimping, are criminal offences.
And what is it that you want to see the law change to? Because I know there's a campaign at the moment, isn't there?
Yeah, so I mean, what we see with what we see is wrong with the law at the moment is you have websites who host adverts for those selling sexual access to women, generate huge profits and turbocharge the market. They're operating free from criminal sanctions. The men who exploit women by paying for sex enjoy impunity, but women abused by men through prostitution face penalties for soliciting. So, it feels like that current legal situation is really hugely unjust, and you can see who's profiting and you can see who's protected, and it's not the women at the heart of it.
So what's been going on in Parliament? I know you've spoken a few debates as well, and there's some pledges as well for change within the government. What is it that's happening in Holyrood just now to sort of try and change this?
Within the Parliament itself, we have a cross-party group that seek to influence and to make changes. The government has published a strategy recently, which is very welcome, aimed at tackling male demand for sexual access to women. The Scottish government do recognise prostitution as violence against women, but unfortunately there's a huge gap between policy and the law, and therefore the reality that women face. What we're campaigning for is to outlaw online pimping and the purchase of women, so that you can hold the traffickers to account, hold male buyers to account, but also decriminalise women and provide a comprehensive support and exiting package for them.
And I know we've spoken before just how prevalent it is in Scotland. Do you think that people are maybe just not aware of how big an issue this is in Scotland?
I think that's absolutely the case. I think that, you know, in cities there may be some women may be visible on the street, but actually it's these online sites and what's going on behind closed doors. And I think people across Scotland would be shocked that in their towns right across Scotland there are women being exploited in this manner.
And I believe that you're looking abroad to see how things are done there in places like Sweden, for example. How is that fitting into everything?
The organisation Model for Scotland, of which I'm a member of the steering group, produced a really helpful report on international insights, which actually will allow the Scottish government to look to countries across the world where they have taken action and changed legislation and see just the difference that it's made for women and actually for wider society.
I've been speaking to a few women who have survived prostitution for this series, which the listeners can go into the Scotsman's website to see that. But some of the stories they were saying, it's quite shocking, some of the stories that you hear, the levels of violence and exploitation that these women are experiencing. What have you been hearing on your side of things when it comes to that?
So the organisation that I'm a member for is very much survivor-led. And I think the thing that struck me is that the violence for women involved in prostitution is a daily occurrence. We have survivors who were involved in street prostitution and also those who may have been involved in what some might call a escorting or higher end. And no matter the location for women, the violence enacted on them by the men is the same. It's not a job like no other. There aren't other jobs where you're at daily risk of rape and violence. It is an intolerable situation. And I think in a country that aims to be progressive and aims to have equality for men and women, we send entirely the wrong message by allowing this violence to continue.
Do you think that the law is going to change quite soon? Do you think there's quite a momentum behind your campaign now?
Legislation never happens quickly. I would say it's long overdue. Scottish Government policy that prostitution is violence against women has been in place for decades. And I think we need to up the urgency on it. Certainly myself and my colleagues will keep up the pressure. We hope that members of the public, as they become aware, will demand action as well from their representatives, from their government. It's hard to imagine any other group in society where we would tolerate this violence and indeed punish the victims of the violence.
Ruth McGuire, thank you very much for joining us on the Steamy today.
Thank you so much for having me.
That was Ruth McGuire, the SNP MSP, speaking to Rachel Amory earlier this week about proposed changes to prostitution laws in Scotland. But that's all we've got time for. Thanks very much for listening. Please tune in again next week. And in the meantime, check out the Scotsman's website for all the latest politics, both north and south of the border. Thanks very much.